All right, now joining us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is 1980 U.S. Hockey gold medal winning goalie Jim Craig. Let me give you some background on Jim. He's from Easton, Massachusetts, played his college hockey at Boston University. He helped lead BU to a national championship in 1978, and he was a college all-star in 1979. He was inducted into the BU Hall of Fame in 1989. And as you all know, Jim was a part of the U.S. hockey team that beat the nearly invincible Soviet Union team back in the Miracle on Ice game. And something everyone doesn't always remember is that they had to beat Finland a couple of days later to not only win the gold medal, but had they lost that game, they might not have won a medal at all. Jim was drafted here by the Atlanta Flames in 1977, and following the Olympic Games, he came here to Atlanta to play for the Flames. He won his first NHL start against what was then the Colorado Rockies, and you know them now as the New Jersey Devils. Stopped 24-25 shots that night. He played in the NHL from 1980 and 1984 for the Flames, Bruins, and North Stars, but he'll live in our hearts forever for what he and his teammates accomplished over a 12-day period. Opening the Olympic Games against Sweden, which took place almost 40 years ago to the night, February 12, 1980. And we're honored Jim is with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Jim, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Jim.
My pleasure, guys. Look forward to it.
So, Jim, certainly what you guys have accomplished back in 1980, it meant so much to all of us. First of all, does it seem like it's been 40 years? I can't believe it's 40 years ago, almost to the night.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? But, you know, as you get older and you have different, what I call chapters of your life, it just means more and more as you, you know, you go from a young athlete to a father, you know, to a grandfather, and you get to see how it has impacted so many people's life in such a positive manner that it's just really rewarding.
And Jim, when you go back all the way to the game against the Soviet Union, and that's the team that beat you guys 10-3 in the pre-Olympic exhibition game that you guys played just shortly before the Olympic Games started. Was there a point in time? I mean, once the games get started and the goal against Sweden, we'll talk about Billy Baker and that big goal. But you guys start to rack up wins against the Czech, you know, what's the Czech Republic now? Czechoslovakia team that was, you know, regarded as probably the second best team in the tournament that year. And then Norway, then Romania, then West Germany. Was there a time when you guys started to actually believe, you know what, we're pretty darn good here?
Well, you know, Herb had put us to a 61-game schedule in 4 months against the best teams in the world. So over that period of time, we learned a lot about ourselves as players, but also as a team. And, you know, we had a really good record. I think we had 47 wins or something, you know. So we were a good team. We knew we were a good team. We had to execute flawlessly in order to beat the Russians, which we did. And, you know, over that period of time, we gained a lot of trust with one another and in Herb and what he was trying to accomplish.
I remember watching all of the games. And I remember watching the game, like I mentioned, to go against Sweden and leaving on the couch when Billy Baker scored that goal to tie up the game near the end. And as amazing as the remainder of the games were, if Bill doesn't make that goal, the whole game probably take on a whole different direction. And I read that if you guys had lost to Sweden, everything else played out exactly the same way that it did. The Soviet Union still wins the gold because they had a larger goal differential. Talk about how important that one play was for how everything else turned out.
You know, it's funny. And when I do my motivational speaking and training, one of the things I always tell people, you know, what's the most important thing in time management? And everybody comes up with a different thing. And I always tell them, no, you have to know how much time you have. And what Herb Brooks was brilliant about was he knew that we had to at least tie Sweden in order to have any chance of being in the medal round. And you look at the strategy he had with McClanahan when he held him accountable in between periods. And, you know, Robbie turned out to end up scoring the game-winning goal against Finland to win the gold medal. But Herb Brooks was so prepared that, you know, you take a look at the Russian game and, you know, they're losing 4-3 and they don't take a timeout. They don't pull their goalie. But Herb Brooks, knowing how important our very first game against Sweden was, pulling me, getting an extra attacker, flip-flopping the defense so they'd be in a position where their sticks were in the center. All this stuff was through incredible preparation. And, you know, there are so many important times where you need to do something special. Billy Baker's goal was one of them. You know, Mark Johnson's goal with 1 second left against the Russians were another. There were so many instances that were so important to the overall win.
And Jim, you talk about time. You know, when Mike Arruzzioni scores that goal to give you guys the first lead of the game against the Soviet Union, there's 10 minutes left in the game. And I remember it being an agonizing 10 minutes of game time, because every time there was a stoppage of play, it just seemed like it was only a couple of seconds came off the clock. It had to be even more agonizing for you guys. What was that last 10 minutes like?
Well, you know, again, I'll go back to preparation. Every team that ever played against the Russians, whenever they got ahead, immediately went into a shell and tried to defend it. Herb Brooks' whole philosophy was we weren't going to offend them. We were going to attack them. And from day one in our training, his job was to make us one of the best conditioned athletes in the Winter Games. And the amazing part about it is in the last 10 minutes, we played all four lines. The Russians cut their bench, overplayed people, but not Herb. He believed in all the players. Everyone had a role to do. And there was a huge trust factor. And so we just went out and kept playing and kept competing. And, you know, I always tell people hope is not a strategy. None of us were hoping to win. We were playing to win. We were competing to win, not hoping. And the guys just did a great job.
Bob, questions for Jim?
Hey, Jim, again, it's an honor to speak with you. And I'm going to throw a couple questions your way. Prior to your Olympic glory, Chris and I always like to go back to the roots of our guests. When they were very, very young. I know you've always been associated with hockey, but growing up in Massachusetts, Jim, were there other sports that you participated in as a youth that might have helped you become an Olympic and professional athlete? And where do you stand on that multi-sport upbringing?
Well, when I wrote my book, We Win, Lessons on Life, Business, and Building Your Own Miracle Team, the whole part of the research that I did was it was how lucky I was to be part of a community where they cared about the people who lived in it. You know, when I grew up in Easton, nobody cared how big your house was, what kind of car you had. What they did is people within our community really bonded and helped members of the community. And so I played every sport. When it was baseball season, it was the Boston Red Sox and we were winning the World Series. And it was basketball. We were the Celtics, or we were the Bruins. And, you know, the great part about it is nobody had a game plan for us to become an Olympian. It was a dream. It was my dream. And what was so impressive was that my parents and the community I grew up with supported that dream. And so I'm a real believer that, you know, you have to have dreams, and then you have to tell people what they are. And then you have to make a plan, and then you have to turn those dreams into reality. And without the support of my family and our community back in Easton, that never would have happened for me.
And Jim, you played for the legendary Jack Parker at BU, who was already well established when you arrived and who you helped win his first NCAA title, a guy who actually coached just up until about 6 years ago, I believe. Talk about his coaching style, his strengths as a hockey coach, and what he's meant to that BU program for decades now.
Well, Jack is one of the most intense competitors you'll ever see. He prepared, he pushed and pulled his players. But at the end of the day, what made Jack so special is how much he cared about each and every one of us. And he didn't just care for us while we were there. We're part of the Boston University family, and that's what Jack started. And so from a person for preparation, he was fabulous. For competitiveness, there was none better.
Jim, I want to fast forward to after the Olympic Games were over. And I always wondered, I mean, following the games, you guys, you go visit the White House, and then when that event is over, it was all over. You guys had been together for going on a year, you know, everything that you went through together, everything you achieved together, and then suddenly it was over. Were you prepared for the suddenness of, hey, see ya?
No, it was probably the happiest day of our life, going to meet the president and the first lady and getting flown there in Air Force One, and then all the excitement and then reality, just wow. You know, we would never be a team again. We would never be really teammates like that. And the bond that we built during that year was just incredible. And nobody was prepared for what was going to happen next. It was uncharted territory. So, you know, I just remember when they were calling everybody's flights and all of a sudden, you know, Morrill and Wells are heading to Detroit and half the team is going to Minneapolis and some of us are going to Boston. And it's like, oh my God, this sanctuary that we had built of love and trust and brotherhood was done. And you had to start all over and create another dream and then go to work and try to make it happen.
Was it hard assimilating into when you came to Atlanta and assimilating into your, and for all of you, for assimilating into your new NHL teams? And because that, it seems like to me that would be difficult. Like, these guys became my brothers. I mean, we were tight, and now they're all gone. And now I'm sort of alone trying to find my way in the NHL. Was it a tough transition?
Yeah, it was really tough. I mean, you know, the Atlanta Flames were in financial, had a financial situation. They needed fans. I didn't want to go right after the Olympics. I wanted time to rest. I had played hockey for almost 2.5 years straight. And you're going into an NHL team where, you know, people are friends. The goalies are really good. You had Bouchard and Riggins, two really good NHL goalies. And now you got this kid from the Olympics coming in. I don't know anybody in the team. I haven't really earned my position there, and very uncomfortable situation.
And Jim, you mentioned your first book. You've got a new one that's set to drop pretty soon. Talk about what people are going to be able to read about in your new book.
Well, I wanted to tell the fans and the readers something that they didn't know. And when I came up with the title, We Win, it's because whenever I think of our team and how people look at how and what our team accomplished, they always say we win. You know, people always tell me where they were, what they were doing, and how it affected them. And so to me, what I wanted to do is I wanted to really dig down and do a deep dive on Herb Brooks and why what we did wasn't a miracle. And I wanted it to be able to relate to not only a person that was a hockey fan, but a mother, a father, a brother, a businessman. And I took all the lessons that I learned from Herb Brooks, and I explain in We Win what it takes to win. And, you know, some of the big topics that are in the book are you preparing to win or are you preparing to compete? And what Herb Brooks was able to do is forever USA Hockey prepared to compete. And he was a guy that drove change, and he didn't prepare to compete. He prepared us to win. And so the book is about how I had this dream as a young boy, and how through community and dreaming and failure, I was able to have enough perseverance and people believing in me and providing me with an opportunity that I was able to be part of something that was really epic. And the reader will see different pictures, things they don't know, and learn a lot about what it takes to have a dream and the hard work it takes to achieve your goals.
You speak reverently about Herb Brooks. Was there something that you learned about Herb through the course of taking this deep dive and doing the research, and talk a little bit about the role that he played in your Olympic journey and really, you know, beyond and throughout the rest of your life?
Well, one thing I learned about Herb, and I speak about it a lot, and in life, you have two choices. You can be a victim or a victor. And, you know, when Herb Brooks was the last player cut in 1960 and didn't play on the Olympic team that won a gold medal, that didn't deter him. It motivated him. And so what he was able to do is, in the movie, a lot of times they'll talk about, I'm not looking for the best players. I'm looking for the right players. After 10 years of research, I kind of figured out what that is meant. And what Herb Brooks did is he found people that he could coach, that he could mentor. And whether it was his inner circle of coaches or his players, he was able to see in each of us something that we didn't even see. And then it was his mission and his goal in life to make us get to where he knew we could go. And so the legacy that Herb Brooks leaves to me is to be able to do that for other people. And that's why it's my avocation to go around and motivate these people to get to places without a dream or without somebody inspiring them, probably never would have got there.
Following everything that happened in the Olympics and then your relationship with Herb afterwards, I mean, it seemed like that going into it, the way that he got a bunch of kids from Boston and a bunch of kids from Minnesota and a bunch of kids that really didn't like each other to unite was to turn you guys against him. Did you realize later on what he did and why he did it and how that became successful?
What's really interesting is a young 20, 22-year-old, you don't have any real life experiences to understand what's kind of happening. You're kind of self-absorbed, trying to change, you know, attain a goal that you have. And then, you know, if you have a mentor who's smarter than you, who can make it your idea to compete and create, then that's kind of special. And that's what Herb did. I don't think he made us his enemy. He just got us uncomfortable. And, you know, I always tell people in life, you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable because there's no end. You know, you just don't get to go compete and say, oh, great. Now leave it at that. You know, every day you have to get up and you have to compete. And so he prepared us and he brought the best out of us individually and collectively. And at times it was difficult.
So Jim, when you think about going back to your first book and now this book, is there a different audience? Is there a different message? How is the second book different from the first?
The first book talks about winning, and the second book tells you how to win. And it takes a lot of effort to really analyze and understand what it takes. And it's through a lot of failure. And it's people, you know, I always tell people that in the book, there's a quote I have. It says, you know, the hardest climbs have the best views. Sometimes you have to be inspired to be able to do that. And that's what this book, it really breaks down, you know, dreaming. It has the architect believing, and it really walks people through what it takes for us to win and why it wasn't a miracle.
Is there a target audience that should be running out to get this book? Is this a business book? Is this a sports book? Is it a combination between the two? What target audience are you after?
We spent a great deal of time to, you know, from a business standpoint, we do a lot of what we call executive level think tanks. And so, you know, this book, I will be able to challenge executives at every level and be able to really make them think a lot differently. But just from a read, it's a fun read for anybody. It's done to inspire everyone. And so I don't think there's any age level that isn't appropriate for this. And that was the goal.
So Jim, at this point in your life, is there still a goal? Is there a why? Like what your why in life is? Is there something that keeps you motivated and your eyes on a prize?
Absolutely. You know, I always tell everybody I want to live long enough to see my kids' kids. And, you know, I just became a grandfather. So that was great. And little Shay is our great little granddaughter. So that's fun. But I love the fact that every day I get to learn and help mentor people reach their potential. And so it's not even really work. It's just the honesty and the ability to help people motivate themselves to get to that level that they're capable of without settling.
Bob, a couple more for Jim before we let him go.
Sure, Jim. Again, about the motivational speaking, I know you cater to most ages, but I'm very interested in your dealing with younger students in schools. I've dealt with them for years, and it seems to me, Jim, that so many of them still lack confidence and just outright motivation. It seems to waver at times, big time. Do you have a universal type message for kids that are really small, say, if you visit a school, ages of 8 to 18 or so?
Yeah, well, you know what's really interesting is when I was growing up, you know, the fear of failing was nothing because nobody ever did anything. Everybody failed. So if you didn't fail, it was not a big deal. Today, the millennials today, they've seen success happen so long. So their pressure is different than ours, but just as dramatic. And what I mean by that is the pressure to do as well as their parents or the people before them is enormous. And so, you know, Herb always used to say, our society has got so sophisticated, it's afraid to dream. I think so many people figure out for the individual why they can do something or why they can't do something instead of letting them just enjoy and be passionate and develop their own dream. And so what I tell people is if you can dream it and you believe it, you can make it happen. And I think it's giving kids today permission to fail and realize that life is difficult and that you are going to fall. It's not if you're going to fall, you are going to fall. It's how quick can you get back up? And if you can find them a passion, provide them some positive influence, great things will happen.
And finally, Jim, the BU Hall of Fame, the International Hockey Hall of Fame, your gear on display at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Do you ever get the point, and it may seem like silly at times, but do you ever take time for yourself or have time for yourself to just still say wow and still soak some of this in at times?
Well, you know, right after the Olympics, we all were trying to make it in the National Hockey League, and we were all very humble and shy to really take in what we accomplished. And, you know, the years went by and the years went by, and we never really enjoyed the moment. We were there in our first game against Sweden before the Olympics even started. And we were there the very last day and the last people to get their gold medals because the Olympics were over. And so I think now going back at our 40th anniversary in Vegas, where all the guys will be there, and we're married now, we have kids, we have grandkids. It's really time to, you know, relax. And, you know, when you get older, they say you don't get in trouble for what you say. You know what I mean? Because you're older. Well, now, I think now is a really good time that we can sit back and enjoy. And as humble as we all have tried to be throughout the years, really, you know, sit back and say, "Don, we did something really special," and glow a little bit. And I think that's it's time.
Yes, it is. Good for you, Jim. Let everybody know, how can they get a copy of the new book, and how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing, whether it's following you online or it's on social media?
Well, social media is at Jim Craig USA, whether it's Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, or but the company is goldmedalstrategies.com. And the book will be available next week on all social networks. So you'll be a link that you just click in and order the book. One of the things that we really cared about is to self-publish so that we could be in charge of what we wrote and be in charge of how we distributed it. So it will be available for all the fans. It's what I call my legacy piece. I had Brian Fox do the creative, and the back cover is a picture of me with my goalie mask because this story is through my eyes, and I'm really proud of it. It took a really long time to get it done, but Al Michaels wrote the foreword for me, so it's a really good book. I'm sure everybody will enjoy it.
Well, Jim, there are so many other questions that we'd love to ask you and get your insights on. And from talking to your assistant, Lisa, we do a golf show. So I understand you're a pretty darn good golfer. So maybe at some point we'd love to catch back up with you and talk a little golf next time. But You're fantastic. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be a part of the show.
Well, what I love about your show is people want to listen to this for all the positives, right? And you guys, it's easy to get negative real easy, but it's not easy to do really good work and be positive. And that's what our society needs. They need to be able to get on, listen to you guys, and have people be happy and be help them motivate and feel good about themselves at the end of the day. And I just hope this the folks that are listening to this realize that we have a choice. We can be the victim, which nobody can help, or we can become a victor, and everybody can help one of those people.
Indeed. Thank you very much for saying that. That's fantastic. It means a great deal to us. Tim, take care.
Yeah,
all the best to you and your family. Like I say, we look forward to
again,
catching up with you soon.
Okay. Bye, Bob. Chris, it was great. Thank you very much. Bye
my
now.
Pleasure.
See
Thanks.
You, Jim. Bob, that's the great Jim Craig. It doesn't get any better than that, my friend.
Well, I don't know about you. I do know about you because you have the same kind of goosebumps I do because you're taken back. First of all, you and I can't believe it's been 40 years, number one. Number
right.
two, we just remember that game so well and the exhilaration and that stuff. Hopefully we can get into the next time we talk to them, how they actually were able to overcome that exhilaration of the semifinal game, Chris, to put it together and keep it together for the win over Finland. But what a guest. And my goodness, he's our type of guy, Chris. Focus on the positive and motivational speakers probably are always our favorite guests. And he's got to be right at the top.
Yeah, I tell you, not, you know, as you know me, Bob, I got my Jim Craig jersey on as we speak. that team has meant so much to me in my life. And, you know, we've talked about this before. And when we've had Ross Greenberg, who was the executive producer of the movie Miracle, and also did Do You Believe in Miracles when he was the president of HBO Sports, I did that documentary. But the call, the Al Michaels call, the last 10 seconds of that game still makes me cry. And I watched it, obviously, leading into this, our time with Jim, and still makes me cry. But everything about what those guys did and what they accomplished is so overwhelming. You're right. I'd love to understand what it was like in the locker room after that game, what it was like, you know, because they had a couple of days before they had to play Finland. For those of you who have you know, watched and read up on it, they're losing to Finland 2-1 after two periods. And Herb Brooks gives a very impassioned, very short speech telling them that they, if they lose this game, they'll take it to their graves. And they come out and score three goals in the third period to win 4-2. But everything about what they did was fantastic. And I'm very, very curious for how they were, you know, how do you transition from that? We talked a little bit about it here, but how you transition from that and how you transition for the rest of your life. As you know, Bob, you know, Michael Ruggione never played hockey again. You know, he didn't go into the NHL. He didn't do anything after that because he felt like he could never top it. Probably right. But yeah, what a very interesting man and what a great situation. And I can't wait to read the book.
Yeah, Chris. And again, 40 years after, it seems like, and I kind of thought people would be on to them and want their services for so many different things. And I'm sure he owes a lot to what happened, but you get to the point in his life right now, 40 years later, where he seems to be at peace with himself and can finally celebrate with these guys in Las Vegas. Can you imagine just being there? That's, talk about emotion.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you give to go there, right? And watch and see what all the different things that they've got planned around this 40th anniversary. I know I'll be tuned in to try to see as much as I possibly can. Because again, it's, in my opinion, the greatest sporting moments of my lifetime was what those
Amen.
Guys achieved.